Hi, and welcome or welcome back to the Friendly Veg podcast, where we talk about the social side of veganism. I'm your host, Serena. I've been away for a bit, taking a bit of a break from the podcast, but I'm back with an exciting new episode with my friend, Jonah. Jonah's a friend that I met in Hong Kong during my time where I actually had close friends in close proximity who were also vegan. It was an amazing time, and you'll hear Jonah and I reminisce about this during the podcast. Together, we'll cover three main topics. First, Jonah will share how he went vegan out of spite initially and how veganism aligns with his morals. And second, this is the topic that I know a lot of you have been waiting for. Jonah will share how he managed to date, get engaged to, and now actually become married to a non-vegan. At the time of this recording, he was engaged. Now that I'm doing this intro, he's already married and has been married for about a year now. And third, Jonah will talk about his experience as a vegan in Hong Kong, a place that is typically thought of as being very vegan unfriendly. I think you'll find this episode helpful. I already heard from my friend Jacob, who himself is dating a non-vegan. Sounds like very other saying it like that. But Jacob said that he found Jonah's tips to be quite helpful for him in his own relationship. And by the way, Jacob actually helped edit this podcast, so thank you so much, Jacob. I really appreciate it. Finally, if you enjoy this podcast or you like my content and you want to support me, the best way you can do that is subscribing to my recipe website at friendlyveg.com. I share exclusive recipes. Currently, I'm focused on sharing rice cooker recipes and also Cantonese recipes, and I'm planning to add meal plans on the site as well, so go check it out. Would love your support. Thank you so much. And with that, let's get into the podcast with Jonah. Hey, Jonah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? How is your morning in Hong Kong going?
Yeah, it's early. It's early. The cats woke me up for food. Maybe they'll be like scratching at the door because I've just locked myself away.
Yeah, for me, Randy, my rescue dog, is on the bed behind me.
Nice. But also, I think dogs are better behaved than cats. So I think more you can trust them more when you're on a podcast.
So, Jonah, you're engaged to someone who isn't vegan. And so many people online, on social media, and in my vegan Discord, by the way, if you want to make new vegan friends, come join the Friendly Vegans and Friends Discord. Well, so many people have said to me that they're single, but they're having so much trouble finding someone to start a relationship with because they could never date a non-vegan. It's just non-negotiable for them. They wouldn't be able to be with somebody who doesn't hold the same morals or hold the same value system as them. And we're going to get to how this relates to you later on and your advice and all of that. But let's start from the beginning. So your mom actually went vegan in 2011 and she did it before you. So you weren't vegan when she first started her vegan journey, I guess. And at that time, you were a student in university. So, what was it like coming home to your mom who suddenly decided she was vegan?
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah, it was hard. I think she's like a really good cook now, you know, like I really miss her, you know, the food she makes like so much. But I think at that time, you know, when she first went vegan, she wasn't as good at cooking vegan and was maybe thinking more about, you know, like what she would want to eat. And it seemed to be like mostly salads, you know. And, you know, honestly, for me as a 19, 20-year-old, you know, to come home and, you know, like I'm sort of like it seemed like the protein was taken away. Now I've just got leaves. And, you know, now I really like salads, but I actually don't really like English salads or how the English put salads together. And I still love now. So I remember being very hungry and just being like, oh my, this is really hard.
Did your mom find it hard? Like, did she seem to be enjoying herself, or did she notice that you were hungry all the time, or you kind of like hid that from her?
Can't really remember, to be honest, Serena. But I mean, I think that she was very happy. She did this like vegan challenge in like 2011 or something. And, you know, it was supposed to just be 1 month. But I think a few days in, she was like, no, like, this is it. Like, I don't need to try anymore. Like I'm now vegan. So this was about 2011, like I mentioned. And then 2013, I was living away at university from 2010 to 2013. So, you know, like I was on my own, cooking my own food. Because of this experience I had before, you know, like visiting for holidays, you know, and like not enjoying the food and being hungry, I was quite apprehensive and nervous about, you know, going back and thinking about how it was going to work. So then this wasn't like a rational or logical reaction, but I thought, you know what? I'll just be vegetarian at home. Maybe this is going to be easier. You know, I'll just go vegetarian. And then that way I won't sort of be thinking, oh, I wish this had meat. So actually, it was kind of like by chance then that I went vegan. You know, I hadn't watched a documentary or anything. Then I was like vegetarian at home and it was fine. I was sort of quite enjoying it. But, you know, I still always thought, you know, I can go back eventually. There's no commitment here. But then I had this, maybe a couple of months in, I had this like light bulb moment where everything made sense. And sort of like being like a vegetarian, I should say I was vegetarian. And you know, like being vegetarian just kind of unified a lot of like the existing kind of like frameworks or beliefs that I had, anti-capitalist kind of thinking or philosophy. And then when that light bulb happened, you know, like everything connected. So I was like, oh, okay, this is, so from then on, it was like, there was never a chance of, you know, going back in the future.
That's one thing I always thought was cool about you. You're very radical. People are probably going to hate on me for saying this, but I have kind of a negative view of people who are radical. And I think it's because, so in university as well, there are a bunch of people around who, it was like the rad community, like people who were really outspoken on social issues and all of that, which I think is great. But I always thought that it was strange that they were so outspoken about, yeah, like leftist social issues, but never vegan. And I was vegan. So I had this negative view of people who presented as kind of like radical, anti-capitalistic and that sort of thing. And then we met in Hong Kong. I was like, oh, this guy seems like that kind of archetype of person. But you were also vegan and we became friends pretty quickly because I guess for listeners, Jonah and I had this interesting situation where you, Jonah, you were going to move into my roommate's room. So we were going to be roommates, but then you also took over her job. So it's like this weird connection that you had to my roommate. And then we were both vegan and then we became friends. So yeah, what I'm trying to say is it really makes sense how you made the connection with veganism because you already had those vegan values inside of you. It just kind of took your mom to explore veganism herself for you to realize like, oh, being vegetarian, this makes sense. But then how did you go from vegetarian to vegan?
Yeah, first, I just think you summarized that really well.
Thank you.
Yeah, those were the glory days. You know, we had such a good
life. Those were the glory days. But that was the first time that I had vegan friends. And I think it was the same for you. Just suddenly, you were vegan. My roommate at the time was vegan, although she's not vegan anymore, unfortunately. But I think she's living a good life. And then another roommate was plant-based, essentially. So we had this like little vegan community and it was just the best thing ever.
A few years after that was like when like being vegan like really like exploded into like, you know, the mainstream. But like I don't have that same vegan community at all. So it's funny, like you'd think it would happen now, right? Not then. But actually my whole life, you know, like outside, you know, what I do was much more vegan back then, you know. So that's why I was
totally
think of it as like the glory days. So to answer your question, it was about July 2013, but the very beginning was when I went vegetarian. And then I was doing like a teacher training course in November 2013. So, you know, just a few months after, and talking to these, you know, people in my course, you know, we'd only just met like a couple weeks before, you know, and then they were just really like being dismissive of being like vegetarian. Like it was this like absolutely mental position to take, or like this completely crazy thing to do, you know. Like I say, you know, for the things we mentioned, you know, about it being like sort of consistent, you know, with like a leftist kind of like ideology, you know, these people like liberal people, you know. I couldn't believe what they were saying because it didn't make sense. So I was like, no, not only is being vegetarian great, now I'm vegan. I guess I went vegetarian out of being open-minded, but like I definitely went vegan out of being spiteful, you know. So
I love that.
You know, like but you know, this is 10 years later now, so it's not just spite, you know. If it was just spite, it wouldn't have lasted.
Exactly. And maybe, you know, parents who will say to their kids who go vegan, oh, it's just a phase. Maybe it is just a phase for some kids because they're going vegan out of spite. But yeah, for you, it definitely wasn't the case. It was the culmination of everything that is what you stand for. Being vegan just makes sense.
Yes.
So you've been vegan for, it's been like 10 years now, right?
Yeah. So vegetarian over 10 years. And I guess we're approaching next month my 10-year vegan anniversary. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember us having a conversation in Hong Kong about like how long we'd been vegan, and you went vegan in 2013. I attempted to go vegan in like early 2011, I think, but then had this, and you know all about this, but I had this period where I stopped being vegan, but I was like plant-based, occasionally would eat cake that had egg or dairy in it. And I remember when we were talking about that, you were like, oh, well, Serena, you've been vegan for longer than I have. It's only been 4 years at the time. Yeah, we met in like around 2017. Yeah, 2015. Anyways, I'm just losing track of time now. But it's just like time really flies. I can't believe it's been 10 years for you now and it's been so long.
Yeah, I just don't really count the vegan anniversary as much because, you know, like from going vegetarian, I remember I ate meat like 1 week after because I didn't want to eat cooked meat, you know, like my friend's mum. And it still wasn't like a belief of mine. It was still just something I was doing out of convenience and just trying.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after that, you know, I haven't eaten meat intentionally. It took a couple of years of some transitioning
to
being vegan. So, like, I guess I kind of count my from going vegetarian more.
That makes sense. And at this point, would you say that you're a minimalist or an abolitionist? And I'll give you the definition, and people who listen frequently to this podcast will recognize the definition immediately. But a minimalist is someone who says that 100 people eating vegan 10% of the time is better than 10 people eating vegan 100% of the time. Whereas an abolitionist would say 10 people eating vegan is better if they eat vegan 100% of the time versus 100 people being vegan 10% of the time. So which one would you say you are, minimalist or abolitionist?
I mean, I would like to say that, you know, in my core, like my instinctive reaction is, you know, to be a abolitionist, but I think I just follow the... I'm sorry, Serena. I'm really sorry. Because before, like, it does this literally mean 100 people eating vegan 10% of the time? In terms of the suffering or whatever, which would happen, is that equal or is it just like the numbers of people?
It's a good question. And I think that's part of why it's an interesting question. Because some people look at it and they'll say, well, I want my activism or the way I view veganism is an all or nothing thing, really. The goal is for you to be vegan 100% of the time, to be fully vegan. Whereas someone who's minimalist might be like, well, that's okay if I sometimes participate in activities that are maybe not that they're not vegan, but maybe going to a barbecue. That would be something where meat and animals are being consumed. That's something a minimalist would do. Whereas an abolitionist would more likely say, hey, no, I'm not into this. And to give you another example, I would say that I think of myself as more really an abolitionist at heart, but a minimalist in practice and really just a pragmatist. So I will happily go to parties where people are eating meat, but I'm going to bring a vegan dish to show people how great vegan food can be. I did live with a roommate who described himself as an abolitionist. This was after Hong Kong when I moved to Toronto. And he didn't want us to have any animal products in the house, which obviously wasn't a problem for day-to-day life, but it meant if a friend was visiting, we asked them, can you please eat vegan? So that's sort of where this question comes from, because I realized me and that roommate, we were both vegan. We both were working towards the same goal, but we just took a very different stance on it sort of day-to-day.
So I guess, you know, in my heart, I'm like an abolitionist, you know, and that's like my instinctive reaction, you know, and I certainly don't think that I sort of pussyfoot around the issue. You know, I'm actually not really trying to make people feel super comfortable all the time, you know, in how I am, you know, I'll be direct. For example, you know, like in our home, you know, like I'm really quite strict on, you know, making sure that the fridge is vegan, you know, and that we have vegan food in the house, you know, that people who visit don't bring non-vegan food into the house. So that's for me. But I think, you know, this question is like, what's better, what other people do, you know, and here, maybe I'm a minimalist because I will just listen to whatever the science says. Is it better from like the amount of suffering that, you know, animals go through and environmental destruction? Is it better to avoid that by 100 people being vegan 10% of the time or 10% of people being
vegan 100% of the time?
Yeah, you know, it's so bad. Exactly. So what's the utilitarian result? You know, does more suffering for animals and the planet happen by people being minimalist or by people being abolitionist? And therefore, like, that's how I will form my opinion. I don't have the science or the maths to make that decision yet, actually. that a lot of the studies and stuff that were being published have strong links to the livestock industry. I question the scientific validity of those studies because I know that studies of the metadata has shown, you know, so.
I should look at some metadata studies because I want to do an episode on the environmental aspect of veganism, and I want to use science if possible. It's just unfortunate that my friend sent me this and he was like, what do you think? This is not great. And to your point, I always think about the incentive system. Like if some paper is bankrolled by the dairy industry or the livestock industry, then yeah, of course they're going to come to a certain conclusion.
I can send you the link of what I read today. And also I think maybe like all your listeners would be interested in a book called Regenesis by George Monbiot. Okay. And it's a lot about soil ecology.
Cool.
Really, really interesting, you know. So this goes into like, you know, monoculture and like they are a terrible thing, right? This problem isn't a vegan problem though, because, you know, what our monocultures usually produce off, for example, most of the soy goes to livestock, right? So, you know.
Exactly.
To get back to the question though, you know, so like you have to be direct with people though. I think that, you know, like being a minimalist doesn't mean saying, oh, that's okay what you do, like no worries. I think people need to be aware of when they eat something non-vegan or consume something in any way that's non-vegan, like the damage that they do to the environment and the suffering it inflicts upon other living beings. And I know that when you kind of have this thing like, oh, it's okay, everyone just tries your best, that can actually make going vegan harder. So for example, you know, like I said, you know, during this transition to being vegan, you know, and I went to South America, I went traveling, you know, and there were sometimes, you know, I'd be out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and we only had something vegetarian. So I'd eat a vegetarian thing. But, and it meant that the next time I, you know, when I went somewhere else and they did have a vegan option, I'd think, oh, well, I ate, you know, I ate something vegetarian yesterday, so I can just eat this today as well. And it actually stopped me from just making the right decision, actually. Whereas like just saying being vegan is the only way and that's the only thing I'm going to do just takes a lot of confusion out of your head. It just makes things simple, you know. It helps you prepare, it helps you to plan ahead, and it definitely helped me once I made that decision. Just like, no, in no circumstance am I going to eat something that isn't vegan. Then I found being vegan easier. And I think that kind of links to like what Aristotle says about ethics, that like actually like ethics is just the cultivation of good habits. So by being strong and firm and consistent and being clear that you are vegan, not vegetarian, vegan, just helps you to develop those good habits of consuming vegan things.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that habit of being vegan and starting that habit initially right when someone expresses interest in veganism, I think it's just so important. It makes things easier, not just at the beginning, but also once you have been vegan for a while. For example, sometimes I'll go to events with non-vegans and friends will say to me, oh, do you feel sad that you're not able to eat this cake? And I'm like, no, I don't, because I don't even think, oh, maybe I should have a slice, maybe it would taste good. No, it's simple.
Right.
It's just a binary thing. Like, is it vegan? Yes. If so, I will eat it. If it's not vegan, no, I'm not going to eat it. It's just so easy. I don't even get upset. I don't even worry. I just want to know if it's vegan or not, and then I can make my decision.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's change gears a little bit and talk about what I think many people are very excited to hear your take on. Let's talk about dating non-vegans. So as we talked about at the beginning of the episode, you are engaged to a non-vegan, and I was thinking back about when you first started dating Nama, your fiance. I don't even remember you saying, hey, I'm dating someone and she's not vegan. I just remember you saying, hey, let's go for dim sum and I'm going to bring the girl that I've been seeing. So it didn't seem like it was even an issue for you. Before meeting Nama, were you looking to date only vegans or were you always okay with dating non-vegans?
Yeah, it's a good question. And obviously involves trying to cast your mind back, you know, to how things were at the time. But I think that, you know, like it just didn't seem possible to only look for people vegan. Like it just didn't, like they're just not enough of us. I still don't think they're enough of us, you know. Yeah, it wasn't a requirement. What was, you know, is like I clearly stated, you know, from the outset I'm vegan, you know, and you know I'm probably not going to go to the non-vegan restaurant with you, you know, like So actually, you know, like our early relationship and still like our relationship now, you know, when we go out, it's to the vegan places, to the vegetarian places, you know. There were also like other things. It was the first time I'd lived in, you know, like a really big city, you know, Hong Kong. Nama is Israeli, South African. And that was like very cool, you know, for me. I'd never, you know, never really met like Israeli or South African people. But like, that's like very like, you know, culturally enriching for me, you know, and was like very educational. So yeah, I think that now, you know, like, well, now I'm 32, you know, back then I was 24 or 25. I can't remember. So,
oh my God, we were so young.
So you're right. And like, I was obviously like a lot less boring back then. You know, I was going out all the time. So, I think that now, because I'm not really looking, you know, to have, you know, these like huge circles of friends, you know, to go out all the time, you know, I would probably maybe prioritize being vegan now more. Because it would be just the life stage I'm at. You know, I didn't meet her, you know, I'm 32. I met her when I'm 25, you know, and obviously like just really happy, you know, and very excited to get married. And it's going to be a vegan wedding as well. It'll be a vegan wedding.
Yeah, that's amazing. Obviously, your relationship is very strong. You wouldn't be getting married if it wasn't strong. But does it ever make you sad that the person that you're hopefully going to be spending the rest of your life with is not vegan?
Yes. And, you know, before, you know, when I told Nama, you know, I'm going on this podcast with you, you know, I'm going to talk about, you know, our relationship and is it okay? And she said, yes, you know, and yeah. So, yeah, it does make me sad sometimes. Like, Nama's okay with that, you know, I think wouldn't expect anything different. If it didn't make me sad, then why would I be vegan, you know? Like, why, if it if I thought it was okay, you know, to eat meat, buy leather, then I wouldn't be vegan, right? But I think that what helps is that, you know, like mine and Nama's like underlying sort of philosophies and beliefs, and we touched upon that earlier, right? You know, about it sort of fitting in with like existing worldviews. You know, we've got very similar worldviews, and we also work really well together, I think just naturally, you know, so we navigate like potential conflicts just almost seamlessly, and that helps. I think that she should go vegan, you know, and I've said this, she said it herself, but you know, we're all flawed human beings. I hope that, you know, in the future she does.
But do you ever get in arguments specifically related to veganism, or do you find that your arguments are just like, you know, normal couple arguments?
I think that I should say that my answer to this perhaps isn't, you know, like the objective truth. This is just my perspective. I think if you had Nama on, you know, maybe she'd say something different. I don't think that we have too many arguments about it, because I think that she acknowledges that being vegan is good. That's the better thing to do. Yeah, so I think that she's just happy to, you know, for our life to be vegan, you know, for us to have a vegan wedding. I don't have to really have an argument. You know, there was discussions of a cheese board, you know, for afters, you know, which I managed to, you know, not veto, but I managed to get there. So, but do you know what I mean? So, like, these aren't really arguments, you know? These are just general discussions, you know? These are pretty easy things to solve, you know? I don't think it was ever in question that, like, the wedding was going to then, you know, be a South African bride, you know? And she doesn't want that, you know? She likes vegan food, you know? And, I think, you know, we definitely had some arguments, like, very early in the relationship about, like, you know, I think especially when it came to, like, food being in the house. But, you know, once we got through, like, those difficulties, then since then it's been pretty plain sailing, you know, pretty easy.
What I'm hearing is that you have a very strong relationship, and it's because you share a similar worldview, and being vegan for you is just one part of your worldview, but there's so much more about how you live your life, how you see the world, that Nama agrees with. You don't have to both be vegan. And now I'm thinking about people who will say, oh, I could never date someone who's not vegan. Perhaps they're making veganism too much their identity. Of course, it would be pretty horrible to date someone who's an absolute carnist, but that's just somebody who doesn't see the world the same way.
Yeah, I think that I couldn't date somebody, you know, who was like Jordan Peterson, you know? But like, that's just not going to work, is it? So, but yeah, there's got to be that underlying similarity, you know, that underlying shared interests, you know? Because, you know, because actually, you know, if Nama didn't like vegan food, even if she was, you know, completely agreed, you know, that animal suffering is bad and we should protect the planet, but she just didn't enjoy vegan food, then how can we go to like restaurants together? You know, how then actually, then that would be a problem as well, right? So there's got to be then also shared interests, you know, and shared commonalities, not just on like the deep level, but also, you know, like in, on your day-to-day life as well. I think I agree with you. Yeah, it's a very important part of our life, you know, and I'd always describe myself as being vegan, you know, not hide it, but there's got to be other parts of your personality too, you know, there's got to be other parts of your life as well. I think that if you make it too much part of your identity, then you're not really doing it unthinkingly, you know, so it's not actually really become a settled part of yourself, which is fine, you know. I think we all go through that stage, you know, and everyone's at different stages. I'm not criticizing that, but I think that the aim is to get to a stage where it's just more a part of who you are rather than something that you do.
I completely agree, and I think people who make veganism their identity, they're making it really about them, whereas if veganism is something that you do out of second nature, I guess, and it's something that it doesn't define you, but it is just how you live your life, then it makes it more of something that is about the animals and about everyone else, about other people. Because I always try to remind people that veganism truly is not just about animal, like yeah. non-human animal suffering. It's about everybody. And that's why a lot of people like you, for example, and me as well, we have these leftist tendencies that align with veganism, align with, you know, anti-racism and all that stuff.
I just think that, you know, saying that, like, it aligns, you know, especially with what we're talking about, which is, you know, getting married to a non-vegan, you know, and part of this worldview meant not buying a diamond ring.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, sometimes we joke about, you know, you joke about this, you know, like, oh, everyone's getting, you know, diamonds apart from you, you know, but it's part of it, you know, it's part of it, you know. It might not then specifically be related, you know, to animals, but it's related to environmental destruction, right? You know, and
exactly.
Social justice. And, you know, again, this shows that, you know, like our views are aligned, you know. She's like, yeah.
Yeah, she didn't throw a fit and say, I want a real diamond. You need to give me a diamond. Yeah.
Insane, right? So this is just where we work really well together. You know, she's definitely a bedfellow in both senses, you know.
And before I talk about, use my segue mentioning anti-racism, I also wanted to mention that it does sound like, you know, maybe a tip for people who find themselves in a relationship with someone who's not vegan. Well, this is actually advice for anybody in a relationship. Just communicate. So you set that boundary. You communicated with Nama and said you didn't want anything non-vegan in your fridge because Nama is a very understanding, empathetic person. She said, okay, that's fine. And imagine if she had been like, no, I want to be able to have my cheese in the fridge. Well, she's just not listening to your communication and she's not hearing you and she's not letting you set that boundary.
Yeah, and I think that then how you set the boundary as well is important. So like boundaries are cool, but they shouldn't be ultimatums. I think I learned this from Jonah Hill, you know, he was getting cancelled in the news because he's
right.
boundaries, but he set them in a way that was like quite,
yes,
like emotional.
Oh, that whole thing.
Manipulative, you know, and like as an ultimatum, you know. So boundaries are good, you know, but you know, you do it through communication. You don't do it through, you know, diktats.
So I had shared previously in a podcast, and this was a clip, and I knew it was going to be contentious, but I said something like, if my partner stopped being vegan, because as you know, Tim is vegan now, and it's been like 5 years, which is kind of wild that it's been so long. But so I said, if my partner stopped being vegan, I would still be with him. And that was the clip. And I think I was trying to express how, you know, there are many things that Tim and I see eye to eye on. If he stopped being vegan, I would definitely be disappointed and I would probably want him to become vegan again. But there's so much that we have in common. I just wouldn't end the relationship just because of that. And I got comments on social media with people saying, oh, well, if your partner suddenly decided to be a misogynist, would you stay with him? If your partner suddenly became racist, would you stay with him? What if he decided to abuse children? And I didn't even reply to these comments. But what would you say if someone was like, Jonah, you're engaged to a non-vegan, you're engaged to a abuser, a murderer, you know, just like all of these very strong words, what would you say?
Well, the internet's a fun place, isn't it?
yeah.
I think it ties into what we've been saying already, which is if Tim suddenly became a misogynist, that like suggests a deeper worldview, right? Like something, a more fundamental yeah. change in his worldview if he became a racist. Whereas we know that being vegan, like most of us in the global West come from the default where we are not vegan. And so what that does is it obviously creates like an entire world around us, you know, that is not vegan. And, you know, that instills certain ideas and certain beliefs that we have to try and unpick. And unpicking that is very complicated, you know, very complicated and very hard to do, you know. And then we've got like societal pressures. So if Tim stopped being vegan because he was just finding it too hard, you know, like at work, you know, he just felt isolated and he felt it was a shame, but it's just something that he was going to do just for his everyday, you know, like mental health. But, you know, at home with you, you know, he would, you know, obviously still eat delicious vegan food. That's completely different to being like, I am going to become a meatarian because humans are top of the food chain and we need to express and assert our dominance over all living things. Different, right? So
very different.
Very different. So like, it's just not a binary decision. It's also not necessarily comparable, you know, these things.
Thank you. Now I can go and reply to all these people and say, hey, this is what I think.
But do you convince anyone on the internet? So this is why I really admire you, because you go out and do it, you know, on the internet. I'm just like,
thank you.
It seems like a scary place and nothing good ever happens.
Yeah, it definitely helps having friends like you to talk about this stuff with, because sometimes I just go crazy, and Tim for a long time has been my sounding board. And actually a lot of the replies that I say to people are, it's not my words, it's Tim's words, because he's much better at phrasing these things. But the first hate comment that I ever got that made me feel so anxious and so upset, it's probably not what you would guess, but it was a video of me showing my Subway order, which included barbecue sauce and mustard. And then someone said, oh, well, you're not vegan. Mustard isn't vegan. Or no, it wasn't mustard. Sorry. The barbecue sauce isn't vegan. Yeah, it was the barbecue sauce. But then there was this whole thing about some people saying, oh, but mustard isn't vegan. And some people actually believing that mustard wasn't vegan. And other people made video replies to that initial person who said mustard wasn't vegan. It was hilarious. But the barbecue sauce, I was so worried, because I thought, oh my God, I've just posted online saying that Subway's barbecue sauce is vegan, but it's not. I've been saying to everybody I've been vegan for a decade, but I've been making mistakes. Like, oh my God, how have I done this? And I was being so hard on myself. In the end, turns out that Subway's barbecue sauce in Canada is vegan, so I was fine. But that really just sent me for a total loop.
I think we're very open-minded, right? And if somebody says something like, oh, actually this isn't right, I think that we can listen to that, you know, and adjust, you know, our future behavior accordingly. So, I mean, like when you just said that mustard wasn't vegan, then I was terrified. I was like, no, not mustard. Can't take mustard away from me. French, English, American, it's all good. But if it wasn't, then I would stop eating it and that'd be fine, because, you know, it's not worth it. You know, like mustard isn't the hill I'm gonna die on, you know. I think
completely agree.
Kind of reminds me of a time as well, like ages ago, before I was vegan, before I was vegetarian, and I went with a couple of mates to the dog tracks in England. I remember, and I'd been to the dog tracks one time before, I thought it was wonderful, it was so fun, and then went again a couple of years later, and we passed through all these protesters holding, you know, placards and stuff, and I remember feeling very uncomfortable, because I wasn't like, they're trying to ruin my day out. Like, what are they doing? You know, get over it. They're only dogs. You know, I thought, they're probably here for a reason, you know? So, like, I was very, like, open to then, like, thinking, okay, maybe this isn't right. So I think if somebody points something out, you can do it in a nice way, right? It's just on the internet, it never seems to be done in a nice way.
The thing that makes me the most worried is that I will post something online that shows me eating at some restaurant and I will be accidentally promoting a dish that's not vegan. That terrifies me, because it's not just me making a mistake and eating something non-vegan. That I can handle now. But promoting, I guess, cruelty by accident on my platform, that makes me concerned. So I try to be very careful about what I post, not in terms of really my words, but just in terms of what I'm promoting, what I'm influencing people to potentially purchase.
But I also think that you know, if you did do it by accident, really, you should just be able to say, oh, yeah, I made a mistake. See, you know, learn from it. So, like, not going to make that mistake.
Yeah.
That's like a growth mindset, you know?
Yeah, definitely. But so for you, given that you lived in mainland China and you live in Hong Kong right now, I think you're sort of bound to eat something that's not vegan by accident. But have you eaten something non-vegan ever?
So yeah, firstly, you're absolutely right. Like, I definitely, you know, have done things, you know, like accidentally, you know, about knowing over the years. And obviously, I just hope that's not like minimized now, you know, it doesn't happen like nearly as frequently. You actually really helped me with this, though. You, like, your action, because I used to get super bummed out. If I found out, you know, that, like, I'd done something, wasn't vegan, or eaten something, or bought something, yeah, it was so depressing, because it's like, the damage is done. It doesn't matter whether you eat it or not. The point is, you have bought the product, so you've contributed, you know, to this consumption of, you know, suffering. And, you know, and then what if you buy something and you take one bite and then you realize it's not vegan and you throw it away, and now it's food waste, right? So it's just this like really impossible, horrible situation. But I think that you just helped me to understand that, like, if you do things with the right intention and, you know, you mess up, you know, okay, not very nice in that moment, but move on, you know, and, you know, know it better for next time, you know. I think, like, fortunately, there's only one time I can really remember where, like, I ate something that was like pure meat, you know, it wasn't like something that was maybe like not in the flavor, like, and it was like, it wasn't my fault. I went to a buffet and, you know, my friend, she also just made a mistake, and that's fine, you know, she said that everything in the buffet was vegan, so then I, you know, went to something that I thought was then like, you know, plant-based chicken, you know, like one of, like a mock meat. I just put it in my mouth and I was like, no, and yeah, it turned out it was real chicken. And I think that was a bit different as well, because it was just such a intense taste. You know, I think that, like, you know, my body's definitely not used to it. And I just felt very unsettled. I felt like a bit queasy for a day. And then even like another day after that, I was like very unsettled. It wasn't very nice. But I think this is why I love Hong Kong, because we don't have to go to restaurants where we make that mistake. If I want to, I can only eat at vegan restaurants, not just one, like a variety, all different cuisines, all different, you know, price brackets, so those mistakes don't happen. And I think that, like, that's advice I would say, like, if you have tried to build like this vegan life, those mistakes are not going to happen, you know. Yeah, incidentally, I was, you know, me and Nama, we went out with a friend, and she brought a friend, and it was a non-vegan restaurant, Nepali restaurant, but, you know, like, then, like, really good, like, sort of vegetarian stuff on the menu. And, you know, a friend was asking, oh, so, like, how do you do it in Hong Kong? You know, it must be really hard. I get this a lot. It must be really hard. I'm like, no, Hong Kong's got just so many vegan vegetarian restaurants. I don't, like, have to, you know, eat at non-vegan vegetarian restaurants, you know, if I don't want to. And she's like, what? Where? And, you know, so I showed her, Happy Cow, you know, just in the area. We were in the Jordan area of Hong Kong. So I showed all the vegetarian restaurants around the area on Happy Cow. And she couldn't believe it. She was like, what? What are these underground restaurants? You know, who'd have thought there were all these underground vegan restaurants in Hong Kong? It's not underground. You know, for us, it's not underground, right? It's our life. But that just helps massively, you know, to avoid making these mistakes. You can be proactive, you know, to avoid making mistakes. And if you do, okay, you tried your best. You learn from it. Don't make that mistake again. And you move on.
I'm glad that I was able to help you. But hearing you talk about the Hong Kong vegan food scene, it really makes me miss it. Toronto is really great in terms of veganism from a social perspective, I would say. It's very accepted. I haven't had an experience here, maybe also because veganism is a lot more popular now or a lot more normalized. I haven't had an experience where someone has been mean to me about being vegan or, you know, berating me for my vegan lifestyle. But it isn't as easy to find vegan. Well, I think it's easy to find vegan options, but nowhere near like Hong Kong. Like in Hong Kong, it's like, really, almost every corner that you're on, you will be a 5-minute walk. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but close to a vegan restaurant. It's just amazing. It's incredible. And like you said, all different price points. So for people, I'm just echoing what you're saying at this point, but for people who think it might be difficult to be vegan in Hong Kong, it's actually incredibly easy, maybe a bit more difficult socially, because like your friend, for example, people don't realize how easy it is.
Yeah.
But in practicality, it is easy.
Yeah, totally agree. So come in and I'll show you the scene. And actually, I've got a friend of a friend coming next month. You know, it's like really nice, sort of like putting together like a list, you know, of like places to go, like, you know, based on areas and price points. Nice. So, and that's fun for me as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. That is really fun. So moving towards wrapping up now, this has been such a fun conversation, catching up, talking about veganism. Do you have any advice for someone who might be either maybe wanting to live in Asia as a vegan or dating as a vegan or just anything? Yeah, your final comment. It can be anything.
Ooh, like I'm Jerry Springer, my final thoughts. I think be consistent and be consistent with your own beliefs and be like true to your own beliefs, you know. So don't try to apologize for being vegan. Don't try to minimize it. Don't try to denigrate it. Be confident in, you know, who you are and what you believe and be firm in it. And when you have that base, that allows you to then be chill, like, you know, outwardly, because you're just happy at being true to yourself, you know. So like if someone is being rude to you, you don't need to be rude back, because like it doesn't affect you, you know. It doesn't change anything about who you are. Yeah, you know, like, think about what your limits are, you know, what your boundaries are. You know, they might be completely different, you know, to mine or to, you know, your Serena. Probably are going to be different, right? Because we're all unique individuals. So stay within those boundaries. Be nice. Be kind. Be understanding. Be open-minded. And yeah, you'll be fine. You come to Hong Kong.